This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. He has been called Jesus, Thomas Edison, and Black Magic, all because of his amazing playground basketball skills in South Philly. But one nickname that stuck for Earl Monroe, the Pearl. The NBA legend eventually helped the Knicks win a championship in 1973.
Earl Monroe comes down quickly. Frazier goes in. Earl has it.
Now let's go to just a few blocks away from Madison Square Garden for this edition of Sports Jam and meet Earl the Pearl Monroe. Earl is out with a new book, Earl the Pearl, My Story. I'm so glad that we get to hear your story, Earl, and thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Yeah, well, it's great to be here. You know, this book is a work of love for me, especially since it's a long time coming. One of the things I tried not to do was not to write a book. And for some reason or other, you know, I felt the time was right for me to do that, and here it is.
Of course, he spent great years with the Baltimore Bullets, but the people here in our area are so thankful that Earl Monroe changed his game when he came to the New York Knicks and helped them win the NBA championship with that great Knicks team, that the Royals Royce backcourt with he and Walt Clyde Frazier, Willis Reed. We'll get to that in a moment, but I want to start with you. You grew up in South Philly in a very difficult neighborhood. This one-on-one game, I want you to tell our listeners about how you were able to beat another legend at the time in South Philly to really gain the status and gain that feeling that, hey, I'm really something special.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, in the playgrounds, you know, your reputation is built in there, and you have to more or less fiend guys off all the time. There was a guy who had gone to Bach Vocational School in South Philadelphia, which is where we were all from, and then went on to South Carolina State College. And during that time that he was in high school, he was all-city. He was the leading scorer in the city and so forth and so on. Well, I was a sophomore junior at the time, and I hadn't even made varsity when he went to South Carolina. Well, the next year I made varsity, and I was the leading scorer in the city. Matt Jackson was his name, and Matt came back from college, and everybody was talking about me at this time, and you know, when he left, everyone was talking about him. So consequently, you know, with all the badgering and whatnot between the guys that I was with and the guys that he was with, we decided that we were going to play this game. And essentially what this game got to be was who was the best player in South Philadelphia. So we went to a place called Landriff Schoolyard, which is on 22nd, 23rd, and Federal Street in Philadelphia. Not too far from where I lived and not too far from where he lived. And it was like something I had really never experienced before. Word of mouth. It wasn't like it was going through the TV or cell phones or anything like this. But word of mouth went out that we were going to play. And it seemed like everybody from all over was there, right there at that schoolyard. So we played a game. We played a game to 21 or 22, whatever it was. And it kind of set the tone for who I was going to be for later on. I beat him in a good game, good competitive game, one-on-one. And obviously I got to be a one-on-one player, as people know. And it really set the tone for, you know, who and what I was going to be for later on.
You started at a very late age playing basketball. You actually wanted to be a baseball player. And remembering the 1954 World Series and the great catch by Willie Mays.
Yeah, actually, I was in elementary school at the time. And they led us to the library where there was a TV. And they let us see the World Series. And that was a very important thing for me because, you know, all I knew was Philadelphia Phillies, you know, and, you know, it kind of opened up the gap, you know, that, oh, there are other teams out there, you know, in other cities and things like that. But seeing Willie Mays make that catch, I think it was Vic Wertz.
Here's the pitch to Wertz. Here's a long drive to deep, deep center field. Mays back to the wall. Makes an incredible catch. Turns and fires it in. What a catch by Willie Mays.
that shot to center field, and Willie just running way back, and catching the ball kind of over his shoulder, turning around and throwing the ball back, you know, line drive, his hat falls off. I mean, it was, you know, it was something to see. I mean, I was excited about that. And, I wanted to play baseball. You know, that something, you know, instances like that in your life as a kid make you want to do something. And at that point, I wanted to be a baseball player. And, it was a while, you know, 3 or 4 years later, I switched from Willie Mays to Hank Aaron. But but that's another story down the line. When I was 14, I was walking down the hallway, and the coach of the junior high school team saw me, and obviously hadn't seen me before, being 6'3", walking through the halls, and he said, asked me, did I play basketball? And I said, no, sir. And he said, well, come down to the gym this afternoon, and I want to see, you know, what you can do. And I hadn't played basketball, you know, prior to that, even on the junior high school level, I was playing soccer. And then I was playing baseball on the independent leagues. So going down to the gym that day, changed my life. Interestingly enough, the coach's name was Monroe Barrett. So we had something in common from the jump street.
When Monroe came in the park, it was crazy because everybody was hollering, Jesus, Jesus.
Black Jesus gonna make you disappear.
We want to see who Black Jesus is, okay? We want to see the pearl.
There have been so many nicknames for you throughout your career. Some stick, some didn't. Earl the Pearl did. We'll get into that in a moment. But anybody that's called Black Jesus, you know, obviously you have to have a connection with the people.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I often say that maybe my game was some kind of divine intervention. I started off actually with Vacation Bible School, which was down the street. There's a lady by the name of Mabel Wilson who just took it upon herself to bring kids together during the summertime and teach them about the Bible. And we met in a little lot, dirt lot, and between two houses, and there were chairs, and then she would come out and teach us the Bible. And there were all the kids in the neighborhood there. And it just so happened in the front of that, there was a fence. They put a little wire fence up there. And the doorway, which was a wooden doorway that they stuck a pole in the ground, there was a basketball hoop. And that's where we started to shoot hoops. Now, I wasn't playing, but I started shooting hoops. So I say, well, I'm starting shooting hoops at Vacation Bible School. Well, now they're calling me Black Jesus. There has to be some type of connection with that. So I've run with that, you know, for all these years. But, you know, it was a connection with people. And, playing in the Baker League as I was coming up, but once I got into the pros and whatnot, I was able to play in the Baker League. And going to those games at McGonagall Hall and all those other places, Bright Hope Baptist Church, that's where it really started. You know, we started playing in Bright Hope Baptist Church, so I'm always in church, it seems. And they would come in and they were, you know, there'd be a whisper as I was coming in, Jesus, Jesus is coming, Jesus is coming. And it was just something that was fun at first, and then it got to be something that was very special.
There were so many things that I enjoy about Earl the Pearl, my story. And one of them is learning the people in your life that influenced you, including your mother, and we'll talk about her as well. But names that people don't know. Ron Ford is credited with helping you get that spin move that made it your signature move on the NBA courts.
Well, yeah, interestingly, because Ron was a guy who played at Cheney, and there was a bunch of those guys, and we played against them all the time. But he was showing me this move, how to make this spin move, and it was, you know, done basically turning your back and spinning, and then taking with your right hand, and then taking the ball with your left hand and going to the hole. Well, what happened one day was that as I was doing it with my right hand, I tripped over a guy's foot. And so it made it so I kept the ball in that same right hand going to the basket. And I saw how much quicker that was. And that's what I decided to do. I was going to keep it in that one hand, you know. But, you know, while I was writing this book, and I saw Ron, you know, I went to Philadelphia for a thing that one of our other guys, Wally Jones, does every year for his brother, Bobby Jones. They have a memorial type of basketball day. And I saw Ron out there. That was like in June. Ron actually passed away in September. And, you know, I think I'm hoping I put his name in this book as well, you know, as someone that I wanted to thank.
That spin move and the backing in on a player that Oscar Robertson showed you were really the two signature moves that led Earl the Pearl Monroe to be the Hall of Fame player, correct? Those were the two moves that you used the most, but then you just started to all the different things you could do with the basketball. I like how you admitted that many times you had no idea what you were going to do with the basketball.
Well, you know, I wasn't completely blank on what was going to happen. I think that, you know, as I came down, I had an idea of what would happen if guys did certain things. So basically my game was act to a reaction. And if I went left and a guy went left, then I'd go right. So what I used to call is be there where he ain't. And so that's kind of how I built my game. But I think more importantly, my game was built more so on trial and error. You know, things that I try that worked, I kept, and things that I didn't, you know, that didn't work, I kind of cast aside. And a lot of that was done, you know, through playing in the playgrounds early on with my adopted team, the Trotters, the guys that I played with in South Philadelphia, Smitty, Clisby, Wilkie, John Anderson, Ronald Reese. You know, we were a team.
We're speaking with legendary basketball player Earl Monroe here, who's out with a new book, Earl the Pearl, My Story. He's also the producer of the wonderful documentary film Black Magic that talks about how the black schools, the black colleges and universities, a lot of things that people didn't know about and really introduced you to the world of black basketball in different ways than ever before. When we talk about the glory years with Earl the Pearl Monroe, you had so many terrific years with the Baltimore Bullets. You were a superstar with the Baltimore Bullets. Then you came to New York. And you had to fit in with a team that was already winning, and you had to fit in with a bunch of players who were already successful as a team. You talk about how when you were greeted, everybody said, but how about this backcourt? And they can have all the lists they want, Earl. There's not a better backcourt that ever was than Earl the Pearl Monroe and Walt Frazier. Just getting used to playing with those terrific players. Tell me how difficult it really was for you.
Well, you know, in Baltimore, you know, was my team. And, you know, with your team, you have a certain cadence of how you play. And, you know, it's just like music. You know, you know, there's a certain cadence of how you move and how people flow into getting into that cadence. In New York, it was a different cadence. And I had to find, you know, my spot. You know, it was a lot like Double Dutch. You know, how you get, you know, how you jockey back and forth until you could jump into it. That's kind of the way it was. But it was made easier because I did have a bunch of veteran players with me, or, you know, that I came to, which was almost a mirror image of the team that I had left. And, you know, I felt as though the games that we played against New York in the playoffs were probably the best games that I ever played in. And the one that we lost to them in seven games was probably the best that I, because for me, it was about winning, but it was also about competition. And I enjoyed the competition. When you're out there and you battling and whatnot, it makes it so that the game actually becomes secondary, you know, in your mind and whatnot. Of course, you want to win, but, you know, the competition aspect of it you know, sits up front. So, yeah, it was a difficult situation because a lot of times when you have your own team, you know when you're going to take over a game. You know when somebody needs to have the ball. You know when, you know, when you need to step up in certain areas and whatnot. And in New York, you know, Clyde had those options and whatnot.
Did it mean even more to you to win that 73 NBA championship because of the team that you beat? You mentioned in the book that you feel that Wilt Chamberlain is the greatest player that's ever played the game. Jerry West, considered one of the great players of all time as well. Did that make it even more special?
Well, what made it special was because the year before, Gail Goodrich, you know, kind of dumped me out of there. It made it special because I was able to redeem myself in this particular series. I was a little more healthier than I was, obviously, last year, because after that series, I had to go get the bone spurs taken care of. And then, actually, the next year, I had to go get the – they didn't take them all out. I had to go get another bone spur operation. But this was satisfying because it was, you know, it was that time of redemption. And interestingly enough, at that point, I had been in the finals for 3 years in a row, one with Baltimore where we lost to Milwaukee, then the two with New York. And as a player, all of a sudden, I felt this is how it was going to be all every year, and never got back there. So that's why it's important to really savor the time that you're, you know, you're in the finals and things like that, because you never know if you're going to get back.
You're listening to Sports Jam on Jazz 88.3 FM and WBGO.org. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest tonight, Earl Monroe, averaged 41.5 points his senior year at Division II Winston-Salem State University, leading the Rams to the NCAA College Division Championship. Earl, the Pearl was a nickname that came out of a game against Akron when you were playing at Winston-Salem.
Led by the fabulous Earl Monroe, this team's a mover. That's Monroe with the ball, and he rarely misses.
You had times you had to really work to get into that lineup. It wasn't just like Earl the legend steps on the court and he's this great basketball player. You worked at it.
Well, we had a legendary coach at Winston-Salem, Big House Gaines, and he didn't believe in playing freshmen. Me going down there after, you know, I stayed out of school a year because I wanted to play in what they had back in those days was the ABL. I think it was the Philadelphia Tapers. And in the fall of the year that I was going to try out, that league folded. So it left me out to go to Temple Prep and play against like the Big Five, you know, Penn, Temple, and all those, UP, and all those freshman teams. And I was wearing those guys out. So I knew I could play, you know. And so after the season, I just dropped out of Temple Prep. And a guy came up to me by the name of Leon Whitney and asked me if I wanted to go to Winston-Salem. Well, I hadn't really never heard of Winston-Salem. And so I told him, you know, no, not at, you know, no. So we went on, and, you know, this was like in February, and we went on and on. And, you know, Leon was a referee in the league, but he had gone to Winston-Salem. Back in those days, you know, the guys who had gone to those schools were the real recruiters. And, you know, they would tell the coach, well, I think there's a guy up here I think would be good for the team. And he did that. So when I went, when I finally said yes, which was sometime in the summertime, I told him that, yeah, I'll go if my man Smitty could go with me. And he said, well, let me get back to you. And I said, okay. And he came back. He said, I think I could arrange that. You know, my game just started to jump up by leaps and bounds by being constantly playing, you know, with the practicing and so forth and so on with guys who were at that time better than I was. And as the season grew, I saw myself getting that much better. And I, after the season, I said, Coach, I think I'm going to go on back. I had gotten some offers, actually, from some other school, bigger schools and whatnot. And so he said, well, son, he said, we're here for a minute. He went back in the office, and after about 10 minutes, he called me in the office and said, somebody wants to talk to you. And he gave me the phone, and it was my mother and my sister. And they told me, and my sister Ann said, Earl, you better stay where you are. And my mother said, boy, Coach Gaines just called me, and he told me, he said, you better stay there. And so that was it. I stayed for another 3 years.
You speak a lot about your mom and your grandma in the book, Earl the Pearl, My Story. And you really sum up the feelings that you had for your mother when near the end of the book you talk about how your biggest regret is the fact that she did not get to see you win that NBA championship with the Knicks. What did Mom mean to you?
Well, she was my everything. You know, I can't think of anything that I would have done or could do without her, you know, because I always wanted to do for her. I always wanted her to have certain things. And I understood and realized, you know, the sacrifices that she made for me. I mean, you know, even and I think the thing that really turned me around was the fact that, you know, she was actually out in the street after working in the factory all days, and I had a paper route. She would go on a paper route with me. And one day we were at someone's house, and the kid came to the door, and he said, called back in the house, it's the paper lady. And he said, that struck a chord with me, and it hurt me. And from then on, it was like, you know, I'm going to do something to make her proud. I'm going to do something to warrant her affection. And that's what I spent the rest of my life doing.
You talked about before we started this interview how you wanted people to really get to know who Earl Monroe was. Vernon, by the way, is Earl's real name. And I think how you handled the telling of your father in this book also shows what kind of person you are. Your dad left when you were young, but eventually you had a reunion with him and got to share a lot of great moments with your dad, too, and even included a picture of dad in the book. And, you know, I got to give you a lot of credit, Earl, for that, because that kind of shows who you are really inside, that you know that it was the total makeup of your story that really came out. Those pictures, you have it of the school where you made your first basket. You have a picture there. I see that heart in there is a pretty big one, isn't it, Earl?
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, these are all the things that made me who I am. And, you know, even with my dad, you know, I had come to the realization that, you know, after a while, you know, everybody's got their life to live. And sometimes you might not be a part of it at that time. But that's no reason to really just, you know, feel that ill about someone. I mean, you don't know what reasons why they left or whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is that when I did meet him again, and even, you know, on his mantelpieces were clippings of me and things of that nature, and he just found it in his own heart to say that was my son. He didn't know it. He didn't know it at the time, but he felt a closeness to that. And that closeness I felt within him. He was a very gentle guy as well. And, you know, as a young guy, when I first got with him, it was all about, you know, okay, here's another money. It's another source of money. And then as I got to know him, you know, that was the furthest thing from my mind.
And the pitcher, he's a dead ringer for you. You guys look a lot alike, don't you?
Yeah, I know, man. I tell you, I say, okay, I told myself, okay, I want to let my hair grow out. But my hair is white. I can't stand it. So I had to go back and start doing a little bit of something to it, you know. But, you know, and when I met him, I thought he was foreign because he had this accent, you know. You know, he came from South Carolina and down there they call the Geechies. And they have a certain twang about how they, when they speak and whatnot, very proper and whatnot. But yeah, you know, you can't deny that I'm his son.
all the great players of today's world, as we see them up on the neon signs, did Earl Monroe come about 30 years too soon? Because your flashy play, you'd have your own shoes everywhere. You'd have all this merchandise everywhere. You would just be, I mean, everybody knew Earl Monroe, but now with the way marketing is, can you imagine what Earl the Pearl would be making?
Well, I could only imagine. But, you know, if I look out there and I see the game that's being played, you know, obviously what it is a manifestation of my own game. And so I'm very happy about the situation that I played when I played, played with the players that I played and played with and against. And if anything, you would think that I'm either the father or the grandfather of this new game.
In Bill Bradley's foreword in your book, he makes a mention that you were like a great jazz artist, and the fact that you created in the moment. And you mentioned that you're a fan of R&B, you're a fan of all kinds of music, in fact, but you mentioned jazz a lot, and you mentioned Miles Davis a lot. You were like a jazz artist on the basketball court, weren't you?
Yeah, I guess you can say that. You know, it's improv. And as I said, you know, you might have it in your mind or what you might want to do, but, you know, it's like, you know, you have to feed off of what the other person does to do what you're going to do. So if I'm going left and he's going left, then I'm just faking going left. I'm actually going right. So yeah, it's very improvisational. And it's what's interesting, I'll go, Miles used to call me, and I could never understand what Miles said. Miles would say, "Hey, Pearl," and I say, "Yeah, right, yeah," you know what I mean? And, and you know, when I just got finished talking about the next year I had to get the bone spur operation. Well, Miles had gotten a hip operation, and he had this orthopedic bed. So I'm, you know, he's calling me all the time. And all I can understand bed, but, you know, but that's all I could understand. And so 15, 20 years later, I read his autobiography, and it's done by Quincy Troop, who's also my co-writer here. So in the autobiography, I realized that he had his orthopedic bed, and he was calling me to offer me the orthopedic bed, you know, that much later. So when I read this, and I said, well, I'm going to go and try and find Quincy Troop to write my autobiography, and that's what I did.
The music itself of Miles Davis, what was it about his music that kind of meshed in with all the other kind of genres of music that you like?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard to say, you know, I think the thing that I can say is that when you heard Miles, you knew it was him. And that's the way I wanted to play. When you saw me play, you knew it was me.
As we wrap up this edition of Sports Jam with the great Earl the Pearl Monroe, young kids watching the game today that might not remember those Knick teams, they weren't around, and the great Baltimore Bullets teams. Somebody says, Earl Monroe, how do you want them to remember you?
If they're basketball people, obviously, as I said before, he's the father of this new game. If they're not, then he was a nice guy.
Earl, what a pleasure to have you here on Sports Jam.
It's great to be with you, though.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcast versions of the show by going to WBGO.org/SportsJam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Sports Jam rotates monthly with conversations with Alan Wolper, So Sports Jam returns in May with a whole new month of shows with guests like Mike Tyson and Dr. Leon Smith. Next Wednesday night, a rebroadcast of Alan Wolper's conversation with the late Ed Koch. Until the next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.